Hello there, thank you for joining for another episode of Turkey Book Talk. I'm William Armstrong here in Istanbul. In this podcast, we hear from authors of newly released books on Turkey and the region. Give our Facebook page a like and or follow the Twitter account at Turkey Book Talk. There are show notes and links at armstrongwilliam.wordpress.com. And please do rate or review the podcast wherever you listen to it, which really helps more people find it. Don't forget to consider becoming a Turkey Book Talk member for exclusive extras and help us keep going. Joining our growing list of signed up members gets you transcripts in both English and Turkish of every interview published on Turkey Book Talk via email as soon as the episode is published. You also get transcripts of the entire Turkey Book Talk archive, which so far amounts to over 80 conversations and which includes a number of extra interviews not previously published on the podcast. Members also get access to an exclusive discount deal, a whopping 35% off the cover price of books published in IB Taurus's extensive Turkey and Ottoman history category. IB Taurus, which is now part of Bloomsbury, has well over 400 books in its Turkey and Ottoman history series, including both academic and general interest titles. Turkey Book Talk members receive a special code for a 35% discount on books in that series, including physical books, pre-orders, and ebooks. In fact, the deal actually includes the title that we discuss in this very episode. Last but not least, members also receive an archive of 231 book reviews written by myself, covering various categories including Turkish and international fiction and poetry, history, politics, journalism, the Middle East and Europe. That archive was written over the course of 5 years and was previously available online, but nowadays a Turkey Book Talk membership is the only way to access it. So to become a member, all you have to do is pledge a minimum of $3 per episode via Turkey Book Talk's official Patreon account. New episodes go out every 2 weeks, so the monthly membership price is no more than $6. Of course, if you're feeling particularly generous and want to pledge more, then you'll certainly be more than welcome, but so long as you pledge $3 or above per episode, membership is entirely at your own discretion. Members only get charged when a new episode is published, so there are no prior commitments or strings attached. You'll be free to sign off whenever you want. But now on with our latest episode. In it, we welcome Selda Tuncer. She's an assistant professor of sociology at Üçüncü Yüzyıl University in Van and the author of Women and Public Space in Turkey, Gender, Modernity and the Urban Experience, which, as I mentioned, is published by IB Taurus. The book is based on dozens of rich, extensive interviews with multiple generations of mostly middle-class women who lived in Ankara between 1950 and 1980. These were decades of seismic changes in the country's society and economy, and the book reflects on these changes through the reflections of its subjects, comparing their experiences of living in the Turkish capital in the middle of the 20th century. I started by asking Selda Tuncer to talk about how the idea for the research first emerged.
Actually, I chose three neighborhoods in the city, which were located in the center of the city. They were mostly developed around 50s and later onwards. I chose these three neighborhoods and then I decided to make interview with women who have been living in these neighborhoods at least for a while, for more than 10 years at least. And I also have another criteria about age. I had interviews with mainly two generations of women and some of them are mother and daughters. And so because of this, I had such criteria. They have to be born or grown up from very early ages in Ankara. They would have been living in this neighborhood. And also they have to be in certain ages. So the oldest woman I interviewed was 90. The youngest one was 40. So a kind of 50-year period. It was really difficult because you have to find women who are comparing with this criteria.
So the decades that you researched, they were really an era of great changes. We're talking about the 1950s, 1960s, 1970s. Very rapid shifts in urban life in Turkey for a number of reasons, really. And one of the key things that happened during these decades was this huge rise in internal migration or urbanization. So basically people of peasant origin sort of moving from rural areas into the big cities like Ankara and Istanbul. And this had huge effects in terms of the urban fabric and behavior, and we've actually talked about this issue, very important issue, in previous episodes of the podcast. It was a hugely important thing and it really affected politics and the economy in Turkey. Just wonder how this issue of migration reflected in the interviews that you conducted. How did the women that you spoke to remember it?
One of the most commonly studied subjects about this period was the migration. In my case, in my research, this was not very prominent, you know, in my work, also in the narratives of women. But Ankara is the capital, and there was a continuous migration from the foundation of the, you know, republic in the beginning, especially in the 30s. And after that, there was a significant migration from surrounding cities, also from Istanbul. And then after 50s, as you said, there's a huge migration from rural areas. But this was not one of the things that touched the women's lives. I am talking about the neighborhoods I am working. Esat, Cebeci, Ayrancı, these are more central neighborhoods. They had some, you know, small anecdotes of encountering, maybe at school, at neighborhoods, but these are the middle class neighborhoods mostly. There were migrants, but mostly from surrounding cities with economic status. They mostly came for higher education of their children or just for better work, but they were more willing to integrate to this urban life. And also there were migrants, for instance, working as the apartment staff, doorkeeper or something in English, cleaners, this kind of things. But except this, they don't have noticeable anecdotes in their narratives. But in terms of development of Ankara, this massive migration was had a huge impact, of course, in terms of city structure, in terms of physical development of the city, because after this, the city began to have dual structure. The north side populated by migrants or lower class, and the south side populated by the more middle and upper middle class. And you can see in the food culture, for instance, as we know, all kebab or this kind of traditional fast food started to appear by the flow of these migrants. And also the city become diversified in terms of class and gender, and which can be observed apparently, evidently, in urban public spaces, parks or squares or cinemas. And there are a lot of places that you can see that diversity.
And most of the interviewees were sort of middle class, living in settled neighborhoods. And this was a time when these migrants were moving in and setting up basically what were called Gecekondu neighborhoods on the more peripheral areas of the city. And as you mentioned, there were areas like parks where the kind of two worlds really collided. And, yeah, you know, public space in Ankara changed over the decades that you studied or that were being reflected on by these women. Just talk about that encounter between two worlds, really, or two classes, at least, in the urban space. It's surprising to hear that many of the women didn't remember that so vividly in the interviews that you conducted.
I guess it is also about the nature of the middle class at that time, because it is traditional middle class families. I have worked not the new middle class, and these middle class families or people become middle class, become to have middle class culture, urban culture, through education and work, mostly depending on the state. And they don't have so widely, so openly negative attitude or awareness to different or lower classes. For instance, in one of my interviews, I was conducting in the garden of the apartment in Ayrancı, which is even upper middle class, next to parliament. And I was conducting with the woman, and she was also retired from the bank, and her husband was working in embassy, you know. But at that time, she talked about how they, for example, the middle class normal inhabitants of the apartment, and also, for instance, the apartment workers, how the families, how they can interact easily and friendly in the apartment. And I witnessed the woman who was working in the apartment at that time, and she came next to us and asked how we are doing and all this. She offered tea and all this, and they had some friendship. The division between classes in terms of space, attitudes, life, everything, I think this happens mostly after 80. Because of this, it is not very clear to see in the narratives. At least in their ordinary everyday life, there wasn't so much difference, or there wasn't so much place in that scenario.
There's also the issue of religion and social life, really, in this era. It's not really touched on or emphasized too much in much detail in the book, but how was that reflected by the interviewees?
Yeah, that's actually very good questions, because one of the things when I started this research, I was sure that I didn't want to study Turkish public space in relation to veil, because there was huge research on veiled women. I really want to widen the perspective. I asked to the women so many questions about their everyday life, and this was also including religious practices. One of the, I think, main part of my research, or peculiar part of this research, was the context was secular middle class. But this does not mean excluding or independent of religion, because this is Turkey, you know, it's a kind of Middle East culture, and modernity and tradition or traditional practices are intertwined in everyday life. And they were mostly keen on doing practices of Ramadan, or they told a lot about their preparation, long preparation of the Feast of Sacrifice. But there were also women who prayed five times a day like this, you know, like religious person, but in appearance they don't look like. The religion, notion of religion was not very influential in their organization of life. So in terms of their relationship with urban life or with city public spaces, the religion or religious practices did not take place so much in their narratives. There was one woman from older generation who grown up in a very Republican family. For instance, her aunt was a teacher. They grown up in secular family atmosphere, but after getting married and after having children during the 90s, she decided to cover and become veiled. It was, I think, interesting. So I adjusted the questions, how her experience with public space or city changed after having veiled. Of course, it changed a lot. I think when you open the question, you can find different kind of combinations or encounters like this. But also, it is about the group I choose. I really want to find an answer of my questions. How women left the house and entered the public? I want to answer of these questions from secular way of life, secular life of the city, you know, the secular part of the city. Why? Of course, I am saying secular, but it is not exactly totally secular or modern. Just middle class, urban middle class, they are willing to be modernized. They are willing to apply or implement the reforms, and they are attached to the state. They become middle class through higher education or state education, I mean, and state wealth. But religion also, tradition also, it is inside this picture. It is just not the determining or organizing part of the picture.
Yeah, and I suppose this was also the era just before the sort of religious revival emerged, really got going. Yes. In the 1980s, I suppose. But the first shoots really of that were sort of there in the 60s and 70s. So you had the kind of resurgent political Islam in urban peripheral areas. And obviously that has had a very long lasting effect. But also, of course, the 1960s and 70s were more generally a time of sort of great social polarization and politicization. Exactly. And there were really violent divides between left and right, and also lots of factions within those camps. And this meant deadly street clashes, really, in big cities like Ankara, basically until the military coup of 1980 put a stop to it all and opened up a completely new era, really, in Turkish history. Just wonder, how was this sort of violent, combustible social turmoil talked about and remembered by your interviewees?
I think this was more observable in the narratives of the women, because what you said, the ideological polarization had great impact within big cities. I think this was the much bigger story, and everyone actually had memories about this and had something to say. This, you know, the political crisis or political violence was, I think, more inherent part of this period's urban experience. The younger generation had a lot of things to say about this, because some of them are really actively participate in leftist movements, students groups, especially from the university, and most of them had some sympathy. At least they had some memories of attending protests. And there was, among the younger generation, there was women who had to leave the school because of participating political groups and organizations. organizations and also among the older generation, they told about the fear about their daughters and sons because they mostly had children in that age who were going to university or just started a job. So because of this, they told a lot about how they had to wait at home with big fear. One of the significant results of this political crisis was division of not only groups, division of spaces, division of neighborhoods, division of urban spaces. Even they told me about the cities, which cities are more safe for their children, which streets belong to the right-wing groups, this kind of anecdotes they told me a lot. So the division of social or political groups realized by also division of urban space. And this was quite clear in the narratives of both generation. They also remembered places along with political protests, for instance, Kızılay, and places around cafes and locals, whatever. They always remember or named along with this kind of memories, political students' activities, this kind of things. So I think one of the most noticeable part of this period in terms of women's experience of public space in Ankara, this part.
Now, the book is full of generously quoted excerpts from your interviews, and put together they all sort of provide a very vivid snapshot of the era. As we read, of course, we realise many of the things that have changed since then. And one of the things that struck me were the references throughout the book, really, to the almost complete disappearance of quite a vibrant theatre, cinema and gazino culture. Now, gazinos were these social spots that, like, sort of nightclubs, basically, with performers and other attractions. And people get very nostalgic about them now because they really symbolised a kind of vanished era. And they were very popular in the 50s, 60s and 70s, as I understand. You know, people like the singer Zeki Müren sung there, yes, and whatnot. Just talk really about what these social establishments meant at the time and why gazinos in particular just disappeared, basically.
Actually, what is important here is one of the common narratives, even almost meta-narratives, about Ankara is it is a dry city, it is a dull city. It is, you know, especially compared to Istanbul from the beginning of the Republic. And this was also always, this comparison was at the center of all narratives, including academic or literary or journalistic. Any narrative, you can see this. But when you go into research, look into everyday life, urban everyday life during this period, it is something opposite. Because Ankara, I think, especially after after selecting as a Republican capital, I think it became a center of attraction, especially in terms of literature, theater, opera, drama, and also actually all early Republican research showed how Republican was founded as a modern capital, in Ankara. So because of this, all opera, theater, and this kind of artistic activity was founded and promoted by the state institution with independent, budget and all this. And what we saw in this period, I think the products of that long period of working on this issue by the Republic, because there were very famous writers, poets, for example, Orhan Veli, for example, Adalet Ağlı. There were so many famous names living or going and visiting city very often. Theater is also another issue, because theater actors or playwriters, they were mostly living in Ankara until at the end of the 70s, this was still like this. But then, of course, military coup in 1980, this was one of the, I think, biggest reason of disappearance of this vivid culture. Also, because one of the main characters of that coup was the actually loss of intellectual or cultural generation, academics, writers, many people. So after the coup, there was a new era, the privatization, globalization, along with the global trends. And it was not about depolitization, but also it was about culture, art, education, everything. This was a kind of big rupture. It is not enough to say that this was the only reason, but Ankara gradually lost being center of attraction, It lost the competition in Istanbul, and the centrality of Ankara left its place to Istanbul, not only in terms of culture, also in terms of politics. There are are many state institutions who gradually moved to Istanbul. And also, after 80s, there was trend, the rise of global cities, global culture. And Istanbul was very good candidate among this. Also, that means flow of the capital, not only economic, but everything included.
Yeah, I genuinely wouldn't be surprised if in a few years the next big project is to move the capital finally to Istanbul.
Yeah, the relationship between Istanbul and Ankara, from the beginning it was ideological. And the whole story is a whole narrative based on this, whose capital, whose government, this kind of question was always about Istanbul and Ankara.
Now, I kept thinking as I read the book, actually, about Sevgi Soysal's novel, Noontime in Yenisehir. It's a great novel. We published an episode about it a few months ago. It basically provides a snapshot, really, of urban life among different generations, different classes, men, and particularly women in Ankara of the late 1960s and early 1970s. So basically, exactly the time that many of your interviews were thinking back to. So it always seemed to me, as I was reading the book, like that novel is probably the most relevant work, really, in terms of the arts for the research that you were conducting.
Yeah, absolutely, you are right. Actually, during my research, I wasn't expecting to face big difficulties to find source on the period, between 50 and 80. But I couldn't find so much, not only academic, about everyday life, about urban life. And then when I couldn't find enough, I started to read literary and autobiographical narratives. And anyway, before the research, I knew Sevgi Soysal. She was one of my favorite, writer. But then I started to read more writers or visitors or some memoirs, written memoirs, this kind of things. And this really helped me a lot. And this time I read and I look at literary narratives more systematically and with more open awareness related to my topic. And I realized how you can see so much things about urban everyday life from women perspective. It was really amazing, and it was also interesting to see the common points between these narratives, also the narratives of my interviews. They were really not the same, but they had similar characteristics in terms of urban everyday life. And also, as you probably noticed, I had used some quotes from Sevgi Soysal. The way she told the development, the change of city by her focus on Kızıl. It is really powerful and very sophisticated. She started with a very small incident, just ordinary event on the street, and then continued with a lot of details about urban life. For instance, one of her comments about the rise of food, fast food industry, about sandwiches. And this is one of the very significant part of the change of urban life in this period. These sandwich shops, what we say picnic in Ankara. You cannot find this word picnic in other cities. So this was actually about the changing of food culture, urban culture, also about migrants. You can talk about everything, about the changing attitude of shopping behaviors, many things. This part is quite powerful. And also one more writer I want to tell, actually I discovered while conducting this research, it was Selçuk Baran. She was not famous as Sevgi Soysal, but in her novel and then short stories, she is expressing very beautifully and in detail how the city changed slowly and also with the inclusion of migrants and in parallel to the changing attitudes and change of the urban public spaces. As women experiences are hidden, women literature, women's narratives also are still waiting to discover.
Selçuk Baran, that's one to research.
Yeah, I don't know if I don't know if you could read in Turkish, but it's really amazing.
That was Seldar Tunjer, many thanks to her. Don't forget, her book is included in that special 35% discount on Turkey Ottoman history books published by IB Taurus and Bloomsbury, which you can get access to by signing up as a Turkey Book Talk member. Membership also brings you transcripts in English and Turkish of every interview as it's published, transcripts of the entire Turkey Book Talk archive of over 80 conversations so far, and access to an archive of 231 book reviews written by myself covering Turkish history and politics, literature and various other things. To become a member, supporting the podcast and getting all that, just pledge a minimum of $3 per episode via Turkey Book Talk's official Patreon account. Also, do please rate or review Turkey Book Talk on iTunes or whatever podcast platform you use. You can follow via Twitter or like the Facebook page to stay fully updated with new episodes, and you can send any recommendations, feedback or abuse to williamjohnarmstrong@gmail.com. But until the next episode of Turkey Book Talk in a couple of weeks, thank you very much for listening. Gezdim dolaştım, anladım ki tek.